Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
All right. Well, we got the news coming up. We'll talk to Jane Kaczmarek from, you know her from Malcolm in the Middle all those years and all those Emmys. Fun conversation. First, I'll tell you about Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other. How about you get your bundle on and you do it with your automotive policy? So you take your auto policy along with your homeowners or renter's insurance and you bundle. You get a quote from Geico. You see just how much you could save because Geico makes it just that easy. Visit geico.com today and get your bundle on at geico.com.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, man. Tim from Phoenix again. Hey, I was in a store the other day, and I saw a guy with a snake wrapped around his neck on his shoulders. What's with these douchebags? Seriously, what is with them? What kind of attention do they need to walk around with a snake on them? What's your thoughts? Thanks. Get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
The snake usually kills them in their sleep on their waterbed in Florida at some point. So you can always look forward to that. Jane Kaczmarek is joining us, nominated for 7 Emmys, including Outstanding Lead Actress in Comedy, of course, Malcolm in the Middle, and our good friend Bryan Cranston. It's got a live stream event coming up. Another Day's Begun, Exploring Our Town, Thursday at 6:30 Pacific Time on PlayhouseLive.org. Good to see you, Jen.
Hello. How are you, Adam?
I'm well. So when I first heard about the play, I thought, oh, in Pasadena. Well, we can't do that in Pasadena, but you're streaming it. How does that work and how has it been working?
Well, theater is, you know, as with what everyone's had to go through the last couple of, the last year, in fact, probably nothing's been harder hit than theater because you can't put on a play with that many people. And you can't put on a play unless there's an audience. And that's the biggest problem, really, because if you've ever been to Broadway shows, those seats were made in the 1920s or something when people were a lot smaller. And there's just no way you can get 6 feet apart. So you could put the play together, but getting audiences to come is going to be really hard because nobody wants to sit that close. It's still not safe to sit that close. Also, if you have an actor who does get sick, which might happen, you know, the show very likely will have to be canceled if there's not an understudy. I was doing a production of Long Day's Journey Into Night with Alfred Molina at the Geffen Theater a couple of years ago, and we didn't have understudies, and it was you had to be really, really you had to be really, really safe not to get sick because they'd have to cancel the show and refund hundreds of seats of tickets. You know, television, they just they'll put that work on another day. You know, they can always move stuff around. But theater is, it's live theater. It's live. The whole excitement of theater is that it's live. So what we've been doing now, something popped. what we've been doing now is Danny Feldman, who is this the new artistic director of Pasadena Playhouse, is wonderful. He came from Rattlestick Theater in New York, which was Philip Seymour Hoffman's theater. And we have started something called Playhouse Live, which is filmed experiences, musical reviews. And when you are a member of the Pasadena Playhouse, you are allowed to screen these things. And so this one is about Our Town, which was a play we did at Pasadena Playhouse a couple of years ago with Deaf West Theater. And if you know anything, well, you can kind of figure it out from their name that they're deaf.
They sign. Yep.
They sign American Sign Language. So we had signing actors, speaking actors who also signed. And for anybody who knows Our Town, it's about talking to each other. You know, it's about, we don't have time. We go through life and we take everything for granted. And can we just look at each other and talk to each other? So doing that with deaf actors was a beautiful challenge. And we tried to do it to kind of talk about the Trump administration and how hard it had gotten for people to talk to each other.
It was an amazing experience. I've never done a play. I was never in theater, but when I was at the Groundlings and they told me I had to go take an acting class because I was funny, but I didn't know how to act. And I found some place on Ventura Boulevard that was next to the Samuel French bookstore on the corner across from the McDonald's I used to work at when I was 16.
Radford is right there.
Right next to the Radford Studios. On the corner was like a big acting academy or something. And so they said, go there. And I went there. And we did Our Town. I think I remember that the play. I don't think we did the whole play. I think I had to do a scene from Our Town about a boat with a furled sail. A boat with a sail, furled sail, or something like that. I had some weird.
Maybe that was Our Yacht.
Our Yacht. That's what it was called.
There's no boat. It takes place in New Hampshire. Very landlocked.
Yeah, they're quite landlocked.
Our port town.
What was the line about a boat with a furled sail? Well, I don't think we were talking about being on a boat. I think there was some discussion. Maybe
talk about in the.
It was a metaphor.
You enjoy your acting classes?
I was so bad at it that I don't think I could have enjoyed. I didn't really enjoy it. It'd be like saying, did you enjoy skiing when you couldn't stand on skis? Like,
okay, but what helps you to stand on skis?
Skiing or knowing trying to, right? Trying to ski or acting, attempting.
Acting is, it's about what you're always trying to do in acting is what am I trying to do to affect you to get what I want, an action objective. So if you go through any script and you mark it into beats, right now I want this, and you mark it into beats, and even if you don't know what you're talking about, you can make it work by playing your action.
Yeah, I think the problem at the beginning when you're a real novice is you take the scariest part and you sort of focus on it, like, how am I going to memorize these seven pages? How am I going to memorize this? How am I going to memorize it? And then it becomes a game, like, how can I memorize these pages? Yeah. And then you spend so much time trying to memorize the dialogue that you just want to get it out. Like, you ever see a really bad best man or maid of honor's speech at a wedding where you can tell they're nervous, so they wrote it down and they just shotgun it. You know what I mean? They just stare at it and they go, I want to get through this without fucking it up. But you are fucking it up because you're trying to get through it at such a speed.
You're not playing. If you thought this first paragraph, I'm trying to compliment the bride and her family. That's your action. This paragraph, I'm going to bring up the funny, I'm going to reminisce. That's my action for the second part. And if you went through that speech, giving it different actions, you could be as nervous as you are, which is what happens on stage often. And as long as you have your technique, as they call it, and you plug into those things that you know you're supposed to be doing, it can be really fun. But excuse me, I don't like acting. I had the great privilege and enjoyment of watching a movie Friday night with my fella. When I told him I was doing your show, he said, oh my God, he's done one of my favorite movies ever. Wow. I said, really? We went and we found it, and it's a movie called The Hammer.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. I'm not just blowing smoke. That is such a dear movie. You and your sidekick?
Oswaldo Castillo.
But also the ending to it, I didn't see that coming at all.
Wow.
That was really, I have to say, I was, and you knew what you were doing in that movie.
Adam, I think you have a new
acting today.
What'd you say, Jana? Sorry.
I think you have a new achievement day. This is your new day where Jane Kaczmarek said you're an incredible actor and love the movie. I think this is your new achievement day.
I'm saying you have basic instincts of acting, which...
Yeah, let's back up a second.
You have natural instincts. And a lot of people don't. But that movie was... And I'm going to have my kid's away in college, and he's really into the boxing thing. He sent home all his tape and everything on his hands. And I'm going to encourage him to see it because I think he will love it.
Oh, wow. Such high praise.
When did you make that movie?
Well, I know I brought my 14-year-old twins. I brought them to the set when they were in bassinets. They were, my recollection is they were probably like, you know, a couple of months old. I seem to recall. So, yep. And they're 14 going on 15. So it's probably coming up on 15 years.
It was definitely 06. It was the first year of the radio show.
Yeah, all right. So,
what?
Yeah, first year.
2006.
Yeah, 2000.
I thought you were saying French, 06.
2006. Yeah, it was a really weird time because I just started doing a morning radio show, and the schedule was a grind because the morning radio show, you have to, well, we were talking before you joined us about rallying, about having that gene where you kind of rally, and I had to be at work at 5:45 every morning, and at a certain point, when we shot the last scene in the gym at night, and you can see the clock in the background, it says like 2:45. It was 2:45 a.m., and I literally had to go to work like after shooting this boxing scene like all day. There's never a good time to shoot an independent movie, kids, if you're thinking about it.
I mean, that was Malcolm in the Middle was just such a I was married at the time to a man who was doing well, we both came to be doing a series that year, but we had a baby and we had gone through tons of fertility stuff to make it work. And I had taken a year off. Nothing greater than your doctor, your fertility doctor saying, are you under any kind of stress? I'm an actress in my 40s during pilot season. And she said, "What? Take a year off. Take a year off. See if you can get pregnant." So I called my agents and said, "Don't send me on anything for a year. I don't want to." And it was I love classical music. So I started taking all these music history classes at the Pasadena Conservatory of Music and was pregnant at the end of the year. But the story goes back a little bit. We had done the pilot of Malcolm, and my ex-husband was doing the pilot of The West Wing. And one day NBC called and said that West Wing had gotten picked up. And the next day Fox called and said Malcolm had gotten picked up. And the next day the doctor called and said I was pregnant.
Wow. Rains of pores.
I remember saying to Brad, I wonder if our lives are going to change.
Did they?
I'd say. Bradley.
Be careful what you ask for. Because those schedules were just so, you know, doing 13-hour days. I went to 7 months pregnant that first season. And our shows were on for 7 years each. And those hours are just, and then I had another baby during the show. So I had three kids in 5 years while doing that single camera sitcom.
But you got to work with Bryan Cranston, is one of the nicest guys ever. And Frankie Muniz is super nice too.
Everybody was. It's just the hours, and you know,
Muniz. Yeah, saying I said Munoz or something, but anyway, Frankie, I know from doing a bunch of celebrity car races and just spending time with him, and he's a real down to earth, really friendly guy, and something like that. If you're dealing with someone as a pain in the ass, Tim Allen, or some version of, I mean, it's just some people are a little prickly, a little harder to deal with, and it's such a stress factory, you know.
Brian, you know, that show was, well, Brian and I were both in our 40s when we got Malcolm in the Middle, and we had kicked around for ever. You know, I had gone to Yale Drama School and did plays and then thought I'd like to come to LA, and television was a good, you know, match for me. So Brian and I really knew how extraordinary it was to have a TV show where we were, well, we didn't know, we thought we were going to be parents on a TV show. We worked 2 days a week. And then they called and said, you know, we're going to kind of make the parents a little bit, but we knew how phenomenal it was to be on a show that well-written and directed, and it was incredible, and we were appreciative of it every minute. And we always made a point when we had table reads, Brian and I, that we went around and said hello and shook hands with all the guest stars that week, because we remember what it was like to be a guest star on a TV show, Sybil, and, you know, not have you just sit there like a, you feel like gum on the bottom of a shoe. Nobody is saying hello. And the star is over there doing whatever. And so Brian and I really made a point of welcoming guest stars every week. And we also had hats made that said Malcolm in the Middle. And you only got a hat if you were a guest star in Malcolm in the Middle.
Well, it seems, you know, there's a kind of a sweet spot, which is you guys had been there, had done that, had struggled, had understood what it's like to guest star in episodes of countless sitcoms and stuff like that. So you guys were like seasoned and could appreciate it. Frankie was probably so young that this was all new and exciting to him. I think there's a sweet spot of being a horrible douchey actor, and it's probably like 27 and a half, where you've had some success, but you're not humbled. You don't appreciate it. It came quick, too easily. That's right. Right.
Oh, boy. You know, well, you know, the saying is that your emotional development stops when the age you are when you become a celebrity. Mm-hmm. So if you became a celebrity at 8, but that wasn't the truth with our kids, though. Eric, who played Dewey. But oftentimes, that's why child actors are kind of such a douchey, as you say, on the show. So with such confidence and brio, you know, is that you become a celebrity and you stop any emotional growth because you become totally spoiled, totally fawned upon. And, you know, you just kind of stop right there. So, but Frankie was great. You know, he kind of, it fell into his lap too. He had done a movie called My Dog Skip that had been a big hit. Hmm. And they were looking for Malcolm. They put him on tape. He was the first tape they saw. That was it. We don't need anybody but this. You know, it was really an amazing thing for that kid. And while we were doing the show, he was 14 when we started. He looked younger. But he did all those movies with the blue, Paul Giamatti.
Not Blank Check, but...
I think he did two of those movies.
Where he jumped in the pool and turned blue. Yeah. The revenge movie. Yes,
and he got so much money for each one of them. I mean, he was
Big
really...
Big Fat Liar?
Yes. Mm. And then another one with some of those teenage girls that he would always come back with a big crush on. But that kid, you know, he didn't smoke, he didn't drink, he didn't do drugs. He bought real estate.
Hmm. Yeah.
I always loved that about him. You know, he had a very good business manager who, and he was a great, he's a great kid. But after Malcolm, he just said, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore. And I remember him saying he was going to buy a NASCAR team. I said, how much does that cost?
He's a very good race car driver. And the last I spoke to him, he was living on like sort of a sprawling place in either Arizona or New Mexico or somewhere. He moved out into that area and was remodeling like a ranch house. Yeah. Gina, yes.
He played in a band and he's a terrific dancer. Wow, that kid was a... He was a sexy little thing. I always think that he weighed 95 pounds, which was the size of a large otter.
Well, this is a terrible segue from sexy, but you said, you know, he was a good kid. And, you know, you mentioned how you become emotionally stunted the second you're launched into celebrity. Did you know his parents? Do you think that had something to do with it?
No, actually, Frankie was kind of but one of the other kids it was, the kid who played Dewey, his mother was with him all the time. And that was a huge influence on him. Frankie's parents were, Frankie was more mature than they were.
Wow. Interesting.
So he kind of wished they would go away. You know, because some people, the parents got very excited about their kid being in show business. And, you know, there were just tales where you were sorry for the kid. You know, and that's the kids. People come out with their own. I mean, Brian used to always say, you can bring out not Brian and my kids, but, you know, you can bring out the best in your children or the worst in your children. But what they are. Is there. So Frankie was just a really good, mature, solid kid from the get-go.
I have twins, so I'm going to bring out the best in one of them and the worst in the other and conduct my own little social experiment. Who is this American genius that you're hanging around with, this male who loved the hammer so much, this new man, this very important man? By the way, I like the cut of his jib.
Yeah, hot this, on the scene.
This guy's a keeper.
He would like the cut of his jib. He's. I'm from Milwaukee. He's from Kansas City, Missouri. Missouri, excuse me.
Salt of the earth.
He is not in acting at all. We met because we realized it's the first time I went online, which I couldn't believe I had ever done. He was the first person I met online. And the thing that drew us to each other was we both had a crush on Abraham Lincoln.
Wow. That's oddly specific.
You can see how hard it was for me to find anybody to go out with.
Was this on my new dating app for available seniors, Carbon Dating, where we can talk about our love of Abraham Lincoln and how we miss the Etzel?
We both are big, big readers, and we both hate the water. We both hate boats. We both love rain. I think I put down that my ideal vacation was Scotland in a museum in the rain.
Wow.
They put on abolitionistonly.com.
Wow. But we really, yeah. I think in almost 3 years, well, COVID hit, but we stay inside it and we cook and we read and we do other things like watch the hammer.
God, I love this guy.
But he's in the horse. He has a bloodstock agency, which I didn't know either, Gina. I'm glad you know.
Mm-hmm. Like a dog being shown a card
for horse breeding?
Very close, but it's not. Thoroughbreds are all the bloodstock of thoroughbreds. You have to mate a thoroughbred. You can't do artificial insemination, which you can do for a lot of other livestock. So he's basically an agent for people's horses. He's got clients who say,
wow.
Say, Andrew, I'm looking for, I'd like a broodmare to go, you know, I want to have her mixed with. And he will find the horse. Then for whatever they want to spend or what the deficiencies are maybe of the mare, he'll find a really good stallion to match that. So he does all the behind the scenes horse stuff. He has them transported out to Kentucky. He goes to see him up. And so he's, and I found that fascinating because.
Yeah, he's Yenta the matchmaker for horses.
Yes.
He's Chuck Woolery.
I'm like, how can you tell that's a good horse? He said, watch. And he had a walk. He goes, see this, 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 see this, see this, see this. I'm thinking, and for, it's like Adam, Malcolm Gladwell talks about your 10,000 hours. You know, you put your hours into doing something and you have a natural kind of gift for it. And he had gone to Claremont colleges, you know, here, which were right next to Santa Anita. And he used to go and work. He was a philosophy major. And then he would go and work the ponies at Santa Anita and just loved anything to do with horses. So
I told you this guy's a genius. You stay with this man. You hitch your wagon to his team. I'm using a horse metaphor.
He'd love that.
That's right.
He really, Adam, when I say, oh, this, when I said I was going to be on your show today, he went, he saw the winning, what are they, run across horses?
Finish line.
The finish line.
And said, oh, we've got to watch the hammer.
Love that guy. Last but not least, another thing we can bond over is your love of Polish food.
Oh.
And I grew up out here, but with a Hungarian grandfather who cooked all the Hungarian food and the Polish food. It's basically pretty close cousins there. And I lament the lack of schnitzel and all the potato stuff and just the sauerkraut dishes and all. So whenever I travel, we always find a good Polish joint, a good Hungarian joint, a good German joint, which you can find in the Midwest and many other cities, but not much going on in, I know you're in like the Pasadena area. I'm out in the Glendale, La Cañada. I can't find those restaurants. Do you have any you could recommend?
There's a place I know called Poca in Eagle Rock. Maybe?
Eagle Rock. Yeah, I've been there.
But I do, and I will bring you some if you'd like. When I go back to Milwaukee, and I'm going Saturday, see my family. I always bring back the Clements Fresh Polish. You know, people always think of kielbasa being smoked. Eschew the smoked kielbasa.
Yeah.
Fresh Polish sausage is, it's so good. And you can't find it around. So I freeze it the night before, wrap it in tinfoil and rubber bands, and put it in my suitcase and bring it back.
Wow. You guys are pretty close to each other.
Yeah, how do you cook it up? I'm in La Crescenta. I mean, I'm within
La Cañada.
I'm in La Cañada.
You forget where you're from? Boy.
I used to live in La Crescenta when I rented a house many years ago. But yeah, I'm just a quick zip up the 210 jump onto that Allen. Trying to think of what the exit is. I'm right there. I'm right there.
Wait, but you don't know because you have a car and driver? Is that why you don't know?
I just typically
blocked out.
I have a bizarre sort of, I have big holes. Like I don't remember my address and stuff. Like I don't remember stuff that's not important to me because I know the exit I get off. I don't know it. I see it. Like I don't know my address. It's stupid. I get it.
But it's like the, you know, horses go to the barn. They just always go back to the barn.
Yeah, they don't know the name of the barn. So I could come over there. I could give your new boy toy quite a thrill.
Oh, my God.
I think.
You know what? It's funny, though, people who aren't in this business, they get tongue-tied.
Oh, yeah. So he wouldn't be able to speak.
No, that's Adam Carolla.
I'd do a little shadow boxing for him. You'd be whipping up the kielbasa and the kraut and the potato dish.
You know what is the movie I enjoyed thoroughly. The most impressive thing in it is how you skip rope.
Oh yeah. That's my thing.
No, that's like it, you would think that was special effects.
I will bring the rope with me. I will skip the kielbasa if it's all roped together.
It's all linked.
If it's linked, I'll skip the kielbasa. I got no problem with that. I know PETA's probably going to have an issue. I've been in hot water before with them. How do you do the kielbasa? How do you prepare it once you get it back?
I just boil it for about 15 minutes in hot water. Get the pink out. You got to get most of the pink out. Then you brown it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Then you just take a little ketchup, a little mustard, and horseradish.
Mm-hmm.
And on rye bread, it's pretty good. Or there's always Polish duck, which is, of course, ring bologna. Soaked in vinegar, and then you make a lot of onions and scrambled eggs, and then you chop up the ring bologna in it. Why that's called Polish duck, I have no idea.
Do you do a kraut dish? A potato dish? What are we doing for the side? I'll bring the ambrosia salad in the jump rope.
Do you know what I love more than anything is Jell-O.
I'll bring the Jell-O. You know, it's a close cousin of Jell-O.
When I was in high school, I thought, if I ever get married, I'm not going to have a wedding cake. I'm going to have a wedding Jell-O.
Wow.
And I realized, how would you do layers? I mean, that's like you'd have a plinth. I don't know how you would do it, but.
All right. We'll get it on the calendar because.
Well, Easter's coming.
All right. I'm coming over for
Easter. But we have Polish sausage for Easter, Christmas, Thanksgiving. You have a turkey too, but you always have Polish sausage.
Oh, I love it. Let me give you a plug, Jane. Live stream event. Another day has begun. Exploring Our Town, Thursday, 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time at playhouselive.org is where you go to watch that, hosted by Jane.
And can I say, I'm sorry, I've been yammering about everything else. Our Town is the most frequently done play in the world. It was written in 1939, and it's amazing how profound it is in its simplicity about taking time to talk to people and look at each other. There has just come a new book has just been released. Another Day's Begun. Howard Sherman, who has looked at about 13 productions of Our Town that are being done. Ours was with Deaf West. Ariana Grande. There was a horrible massacre after in England.
Manchester. That's right. Yeah, a year and a half ago.
A production of it. We had a not only deaf speaking but a mixed race cast. Some of the other clips that are in the book were our mixed race casts. And it's a wonderful play where people say, but this is Peterborough, New Hampshire in 1901. They didn't have, you know, black people there. Well, get over it. They have, you know, people. And it's been a really exciting thing to see the people who are so in love with this play. You know, I saw it in high school at the Milwaukee Rep, and Judith Light was playing Emily, the young girl in it. Which
from Who's the Boss?
Yes.
She is. She is a wicked talent. I mean, she is amazing.
She's playing like the 20. Oh, well, she was very young, but I was crying so hard at the end of this Our Town. And I remember thinking, can theater make people feel this way? It was the first time I thought of that, and that, and it can, and it can make people feel and think and hopefully drop some armor to talk to each other, because it goes so fast.
Playhouse. Sorry, I want to give it a plug. Playhouselive.org. Jane, thank you for joining us. Get that kielbasa. Give that horse man a hug.
Andrew, my horse man. I will.
Give him a hug, and I'll see you on Easter. I'll bring my jump rope.
Can I ask you more questions later?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, how did you learn to do that?
I used to teach boxing in Pasadena.
You're kidding.
Yeah. I mean, no. I taught at Bodies in Motion, which used to be in the basement of like the whatever building in Old Town Pasadena. And then they moved to,
horse stable.
Brignoli. Yeah, Brignoli's gym is where we ended up.
How did you learn it in the first place? Were you a boxer in college or high school?
I was. I didn't go to college, but I used to box, so I learned how to skip rope, and then, you know, I just always did it because later on it kind of became my profession.
See, if I could do that, I could have put that on my dating site and not have to put that I loved Abraham Lincoln. The jump roping would have maybe been more impressive.
Jane Kaczmarek, thank you very much, Jane.
Thank you.
Talk soon. All right, let me hit Raycon here. Feels like we're always looking at screens now. Rest your eyes and still get the content by putting on the Raycon wireless earbuds and listen to something great, whether you're catching up on your favorite podcast or binging on audiobooks or powering through a workout. A pair of Raycons can make all the difference. I got these Raycons couple years ago, and the problem is my son got hold of them, and he loves them so much, I cannot get them back from Sonny. No dangling wires or stems, come in a range of styles, colors, always with a comfortable, discreet, in-ear fit, enough battery life for 6 hours of playtime, and starting at half the price of other premium brands. They're Raycon, right, Dawson?
Raycon is offering 15% off all their products for our listeners, and here's what you got to do to get it. Go to buyraycon.com/Adam. That's it. You get 15% off your entire Raycon order, so feel free to grab a pair and a spare. That's 15% off at buyraycon.com/Adam. Buyraycon.com/Adam.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and do the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gina Grad. Stuff they saw on TMZ. Joe Biden, Kamala. Big news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, I'm sure you were all glued to the television when Oprah interviewed Meghan Markle. Oh, my God. Actually, I'm sure none of us were. And because of that, I have a couple of highlights for you. But CBS, just wondering how much Oprah made off of this thing. CBS paid at least $7 million to Oprah Winfrey's production company for the rights to the interview with Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. A spokesperson for the former royals say they were not paid for participation, which actually doesn't surprise me because, Oprah never paid for guests. So, right. You know, this doesn't change now. Harpo Productions pitched the 2-hour special to everybody. CBS picked it up. Apparently, they charged around $300,000 for each 30-second commercial in the interview.
Wow.
CBS also purchased the rights to show it internationally. It's being shown in England as we speak. The British media jumped on Harry's betrayal of the family. They blame Meghan, the whole thing. I have a couple of I'll just read you a couple of highlights, then show you the quote unquote bombshell from the interview. So a lot of what they talked about was Meghan Markle saying she had very suicidal thoughts while she was 5 months pregnant. She asked for help, but the firm, as she called them, said that it would reflect poorly on the royals. Meghan revealed she's pregnant with a girl now. Harry and Meghan say they eloped with the assistance of the Archbishop of Canterbury 3 days before the big televised wedding. But apparently the vicar is coming out saying that was BS. And I wonder what else was BS about this interview. Prince Harry is wealthy from the estate of Princess Diana. So if you're wondering, oh, no, these poor, riches to rags because they're no longer part of the royal family. No, she left him about 20 million. And when they came to the United States and Harry lost all of his privileges of personal security, Tyler Perry offered his home and bodyguards to Harry. But what everybody's talking about is this clip. This is a clip from the interview that everyone's calling the bombshell portion. It has to do with questions about Harry and Meghan's son, Archie, the baby.
In those months when I was pregnant, all around the same time, so we have in tandem the conversation of he won't be given security, he's not going to be given a title, and also concerns and conversations about how dark his skin might be when he's born.
What?
What? Oprah.
And you're not going to tell me who had the conversation?
I think that would be very damaging to them.
So they did. Such a fucking victim.
Ugh. Harry came out later saying it's not the queen or the queen's husband, but referring to it could be the dad. They don't have a great relationship.
She's talking about like a lot of racism there. First off, does she strike you as a black woman? She doesn't strike me as a black woman. I mean, we met her dad, haven't we?
Met him? He's been in the spotlight. He's white.
He's more than white.
He's alabaster. White. He's porcelain.
Yeah, he's King Ralph white. Right. So he's a big old white dude.
And so is her half-sister, who changed her name back to Markle when Meghan got in the spotlight, wrote a tell-all about her. And Meghan's like, I don't know how you tell all when you don't even know me. I haven't talked to you in like 20 years.
Bitch, you don't know me.
I heard a clip. I don't like her because I don't like this whole victim shit. But you're a princess. And I don't give a shit about the royals and who cares. But she was like, there was some point in the interview, maybe Max Pata can find it, where they're driving to meet the queen. And Prince, whoever she's with, says, do you know how to curtsy? And she's like, what? Curtsy? No, or whatever. And he goes, well, you should know how to curtsy because that's what you do in front. And he's like, she's your grandmother. Oh, my God. Like, what's going on? Like, hey, bitch, if you're not into the curtsy, stay away from
tough road.
Stay away from Buckingham Palace. If the fucking curtsy is a bridge too far for you, maybe you've gotten in the wrong relationship. Maybe Tyler Perry would be a better fit. He already has security in a big house. Yeah. You're already living in his house. Oh, no, wait a minute. I fucked that up. I did the math on that. I'm on a fucking roll, though. Don't slow me down. You're already sleeping in Tyler Perry's bed. Perhaps he'd be more suitable. If you have a problem with the process of curtsying in front of the queen, a B-lister from Suits on TNN or whatever the fucking TNT network, like she's like, I put my career on hold. Like I fucking, first off, I hate when anyone who has a marginal career talks about putting their career on hold to be a princess.
Mm-hmm. It's not exactly a lateral move.
Right.
But like this thing where it's like you're a little shocked, somewhat appalled, but it's starting to wash over you like what you've gotten into now. It's like she treated curtsy like people said, now it's time to take the knife and carve the pentagram into your chest to show allegiance to the Savior. It's like, oh, my God, that's when I realized I was in the cult. You know what I mean? But they're talking about doing a curtsy.
Right.
So she was
expected.
She was put off by the curtsy. Yeah.
There's going to be a lot more on this list that's going to bother you.
Yes. almost everything about this experience you're going to find off-putting if cursing is an issue. But she gives it a... And the problem with interviewers, and I don't know what Oprah said, but like if people are doing a proper interview, they need to go, you had a problem with cursing in front of the Queen? And the deal was is that's his grandmother, but she's the Queen, and you're meeting her. And this is... All they got is tradition. It's not like they create some durable good or they export this or import that or they have ores or minerals or something. They're just, it's just this. It's just a bunch of tradition that they try to keep alive.
Oh, we have the clip.
Did you find it? I just heard it like on the radio.
What? So do you know how to curtsy?
You got to go back now, a little bit. Sorry, if you can. 10 seconds or something.
He says, okay, well, my grandmother's there, so you're going to meet her. Oh, great. I love grandma. I loved my grandmother. I used to take
care
of my grandmother.
All right, hold on. Go back.
Does she not know that she's the Queen of England?
When people tell these stories where I go, hey, we get to meet my Nana. Oh, great. I love grandparents. I love my grandparents. I love my grandparents. Then he said, do you know how to curtsy? And I was like, what? What's happening here?
My world's upside down.
I'd say there's a context if you... All right, sorry. Go ahead.
Look, I'm sorry, but I have to remind you, I curtsied to Alex Trebek when I met him. She can curtsy to the Queen of England.
That's right. And look where he is now.
Oh, no.
Thank you, Gina.
Oh, great. I love grandpa. I loved my grandmother. I used to take care of my grandma. This is great. He goes, right, do you know how to curtsy? What? So do you know how to curtsy? Now, I thought genuinely that that was what happens outside.
Yeah.
I thought that was part of the fanfare. Or, I didn't think that's what happens inside. And I said, but it's your grandmother. He goes, it's the Queen.
Wow.
And that was really the first moment that the penny dropped. Megan,
you ever have those conversations? Like poor Oprah didn't agree with her, but she had to sit there and like you ever have those conversations with those people where they're like, so, you know, I get the beef bowl. And I say, throw in some avocado. And the guy goes, well, it's going to be an extra 50 cents. What?
50 what? Cents?
What?
And you're like standing there going, that sounds pretty cheap for avocado. Or, but the person doesn't, what? What? And then you have to kind of sit there and go, yeah, avocado these days. But you don't really fucking agree with them because you think, yeah, it's extra. It's avocado. I'll play it back one more time. Go back a little further. Just a little bit with the grandparents. She seems like a piece of work just from this simple exchange, which is this is a 0 point exchange, which is I have grandparents. What? Inside? The inside curtsy? That's like opening a fucking umbrella inside. Is there an indoor curtsy and an outdoor curtsy?
I feel she was familiar with the custom. She just didn't think it applied to her.
But
that's right.
Like the whole thing took her by surprise. Like, how odd.
I feel like there's a lot of indoor curtsying going on. It's not just
almost
an outdoor.
Exclusively. Yeah,
behind the scenes.
Sorry, we'll play it.
Harry and I are in the car, and he says, okay, well, my grandmother's there, so you're going to meet her. Oh, great. I love grandma. I loved my grandmother. I used to take care of my grandma. This is great. He goes, right, do you know how to curtsy? What? So do you know how to curtsy? Now, I thought genuinely that that was what happens outside.
Yeah.
I thought that was part of the fanfare.
Yeah.
Or, I didn't think that's what happens inside. And I said, but it's your grandmother. He goes, it's the Queen.
Wow.
And that was really the first moment that the penny dropped.
By the way, do we need Oprah for this interview? Wow. Gina, you talk about curtsying.
Okay. And he said, do you know how to curtsy? And I said, well, I mean, why do I have to curtsy? You know, we're meeting indoors. It's informal. It's a grandparent. Well, and then he said, you know, no, she's the Queen. And I was like, well, that doesn't apply to me. That's just for fanfare. That's just, you know, what we do outside.
Yeah.
And, so like I was saying, you know, he said, you just put one foot behind the other, you do a little bend. And I said, well, that seems extreme. You know, this is grandma, this is gram-gram.
Do you like pita chips as much as you like pita? Or are you like me that you like pita, but you're not a fan of pita chips?
They're both fine. They're good.
So anyway, yeah, indoor curtsy. Sorry. It's an outdoor thing.
Well, no, it's actually both. The point I was getting at was that you have to do it both times, and I was outraged.
Yeah. Why'd your grandma want you to curtsy again?
No, Harry's grandmother's the Queen of England.
Hmm. But if I have hummus, I like the pita chips better. I don't just eat them like potato chips.
I'm. So, are you asking me what food they served when I met the Queen?
You know, Stedman and I have been going steady for, 40 years. He doesn't like pita.
Checked out Oprah might be the next best character on this show.
He doesn't like pita or pita chips. And I'm like, well, it got to be one or the other, you know?
Oh. Mm.
Anyway, you did the curtsy indoors or?
No, I didn't think I had to, which was kind of my point.
Right. Sorry.
Stream of consciousness in Oprah is great.
She's a, so you have to think about Meghan Markle. Like, so you have to think like, here's things I'm going to talk about something that I think's important. That story's kind of a zero burger. It's basically you're going to the palace to meet the queen and your new husband or fiance or whatever it is at the point realizes that you probably don't know a custom that's kind of not part of your world. So he asks, do you know this move? Like it would be a handshake or something in another culture.
Double kiss on the cheek.
You know what kind of story that is? That's a fun little get to know you puff piece if she's on a late night show. Like the funny curtsy story. This is not news.
But her thing of like, what? What's going on? It has begun. Right.
I don't think it's a zero burger. Like I said, I think it actually works in a couple points against her, which is like, you think this is an outrage, but you look like a buffoon.
Right. This is your example of the beginning of the oppression of you in this environment. And this is a horrible example of that.
She's Yoko to them. Right. She is Yoko. Don't you think her stylist, when she's picking out... she was picking out dresses for the interview and she was like, what about this? The stylist would say, not the bird shit dress. Don't do that.
It looked like a Hawaiian gi.
Didn't it look like something had accidented itself?
Yeah, especially if it's an
outdoor
shoot. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't normally get too petty about the wardrobe, but that
think somebody would have said something because she is so put together. She's stunning.
Yeah, it struck me as kind of unflattering and sort of a weird. I don't know if she's maybe she's pregnant.
She is pregnant,
but like 2 months or something, or a few months. I got to figure out how far down. But it seemed like a weird ensemble for her. I shall say. Anyway, all right. Well,
okay.
She's a victim. Everyone's a victim. And later on, they're a racist. And now she had to move to. And by the way, last I checked, the United States is systemically racist. So you guys should have.
Damn if you do.
You guys should have hit Canada or some other place in Europe. Don't come. Mm-hmm. If you're going to leave because of racism, do not land in a place that is systemically racist. Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, let's come back here on this side of the pond. The Senate passed a $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief package over the weekend, working through Democratic infighting, overnight marathon meeting that threatened to spoil President Biden's big legislation. So the final vote was split along party lines, basically 50-49, with Republicans voting no. Included in the bill are $1,400 stimulus checks, $300 per week unemployment benefits through the summer, up to $3,600 for a child allowance for the year, as well as a $350 billion in aid for the states, Affordable Care Act subsidies up to $34 billion and $14 billion for vaccine distribution. And of course, no mention of wage increase because that was the big to-do the other day.
I don't understand why when we do these bills, why we let so much pork be attached to the bill. I've heard estimates on the low end, it's like 9% of this is actually going to COVID stuff. On the high end, it's 18 or 20%. It's way less than 25%. I don't get why, if we're doing a COVID relief thing, if it's all just COVID relief, then COVID relief it shall be. It just seems like so much. There's so much extra shit on this bill, and
absolutely.
I don't get why. I mean, I kind of get why you'd want to do it if you wanted this extra stuff and you said, let's just attach it to this. But I don't even know. I don't get why it's legal. Like, If there was a situation and it was like, well, there's been three or four airplane crashes, commercial airplane crashes, and then somebody said, well, a lot of these control towers have outdated equipment. They're using computers from the 80s. We need to retrofit these places, these control towers, and we need beacons on airplanes or something. And then somebody said, okay, well, how about a bill for retrofitting or getting money to those airports that need to be retrofitted? We'd get away from this disaster. And I said, okay, but how about some money for interpretive dance?
No.
Then somebody should go, no, because it has nothing to do with this bill.
Bring it up separately. Right.
So I don't get why that's a part of our process. And I feel like it should stop because my thing is give all the money you want to the people who need the COVID relief, the businesses or tax breaks or schools, and even the kind of ancillary stuff, first responders or child, you know, young child, you know, meals for the children who couldn't attend school, who get their meals at school. But when it starts getting into the like Philharmonic and stuff, that no, just this.
Yeah. And when you put it that way, you think, This is $2 trillion. Yeah. If $2 trillion was thrown specifically at vaccination and small business, we'd be done. Next week, we would all be back to normal. But it doesn't work that way. And you're right. I don't know how it's legal.
Max Apata, you can probably find a handful of like bizarre allocations that have nothing to do with COVID. But yeah, and I don't think it's what... You know, and then they always go, the American people want relief. And it's like, they do want relief, but they're not interested in a lot of the weird ancillary stuff that we're trying to fund along the way.
It's bizarre and sad that that doesn't make a ripple in the news nowadays. That's just how the system is. It's just, you know, that's just it. That's just how bills work now, especially giant relief packages.
Also, when they go, it's going to take half the people in poverty and lift them out. Cutting people checks is a temporary fix for poverty. Like you have money. If I gave a homeless person $1,000 for the next 3 days, they would not be impoverished. But do not worry. They will get back to their homeostasis of poverty soon. So good luck to us. And I think I may be the only person in America not getting a penny. Who's getting money?
I've never gotten money.
No, I haven't gotten anything.
Wow. Where's all this fucking money going? Find me five good ones, Max Apata, just to make us all laugh our asses off. Also,
while he's doing that, I just looked something and I could tell you what's not in it that was supposed to be pushed through for the COVID relief bill, fixing our California bridges and New York subways.
Right.
What does that have to do with it?
Oh, there's some deep cuts in there that don't not even close to anything.
I think there's COVID funding for gender studies in Afghanistan.
Oh, that's important. Yes, there's a fair amount of money going abroad with nothing to do with COVID. Like,
really?
Think about the insanity of that. Like, we're pitching this. It's like, we got to relieve these small businesses. We got to relieve these schools and these municipalities. Mm. And a lot of the money is heading out of the country. Which is, I'll do your next story. Max Pat will find some good ones.
Okay. Well, this just breaking today that I thought you'd be very interested in. A group of college educators launched an organization to allow professors to express their viewpoints freely. This is according to the Washington Examiner. It's around 200 people. It's called the AFA, the Academic Freedom Alliance, in order to help teachers freely publish, teach, and speak without fear of retribution, getting canceled, getting fired, losing tenure. Part of the goals of the organization will include providing money for legal support if it's needed to those whose expressions have come under fire. Professors involved in the nonprofit group range in concentration. This is not political. Some were major Bernie supporters. Some were major Trump supporters, but they're all agreeing on this. Members of the alliance will pay $50 a year if they're tenured, $35 for others. And this is basically legal fund for when they get shit canned for, you know, speaking.
Yes, those group of racists you speak of. Yes, it is crazy that we're like defending college professors from giving their opinion, but we're kind of at that kind of at that point, which is, it was an interesting. I wrote down something that I thought was interesting. I'm always interested in the language. I always say, like, focus on the language. And it was a story. It was a coach, a basketball coach, who misspoke, and he said something racist to his team. He said, like, we have to stay on the plantation instead of stay on the reservation, or whatever he said. And it was like, it was thought of as racist, and somebody ratted him out, and he got into trouble, and blah, blah, blah. And he then the school put a statement out. And the thing that I thought that was interesting is they said, we want to apologize to all people. And again, it was a coach. He was talking in front of his team, and he was telling his team about how they had to stay together. But he said plantation, which is a very poor choice for talking to college basketball players. But in the apology that the school released, they said, we want to apologize to all those affected. Back in the day, they would say, we want to apologize to all people who were offended.
Offended.
Because offended meant that was on you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Affected, this new thing where it's like, I felt endangered, I felt threatened, I felt affected. Well, nobody was affected. Nobody's affected. Some groups are offended. No one's actually affected. So they got rid of the word offended and put effective. All right, Max Pack, can you find four of those or three of them? I feel like there's a whole shitload of those. I mean, Dawson got the best one of all.
Yeah, but every news site uses a different language and a different kind of thing. Not... So I'm just trying to get a few different sources together before I read them all out to you.
All right. Well, let's do let me hit Geico here, and then we'll get you that list. Do you own? Do you rent? Well, sure you do, one or the other. How about you get your bundle on? Make it easy. You take your homeowners and your renter's insurance, and you put it together with your automotive policy, and you let Geico do the heavy lifting for you. Go to Geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could be saving when you get your bundle on at geico.com. Do that today at geico.com. And Brad Williams is coming on tomorrow with his 7 proms under his belt. Take that, Vinny Tortorich. Let's do one more, unless Max Pat has got a couple of those.
I'll hear a couple of them. So 10 million. Going for the, quote, preservation and maintenance of Native American languages.
All right. How little does that have to do with COVID? But still, in a sad world, it's just $10 million. Like,
yeah, fraction of the bill.
Right. There's some that got some pretty good chunks in there.
Yeah, they're like $91 million for, quote, outreach to student loan borrowers.
All right. Again... All right, student loan borrowers.
$4 billion to pay off 120% of the debt for, quote, socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers.
So what is socially disadvantaged?
You don't have to be socially disadvantaged.
Yeah. Got another one?
The $270 million for the National Endowments of the Arts and Humanities.
$270 million for the National Endowment for the Arts. Fine, you can like it or dislike it, but I don't, when you start getting on your high horse and start talking about families suffering from COVID and small businesses suffering from COVID, and the National Endowment for the Arts, $270 million, probably not going to help the families we're talking about, unless, I don't know, Rita Moreno has some adult children who may be suffering right now.
And I thought, is that money going to retrofit theaters for vaccines? Or, I mean, this has literally nothing to do with COVID, right? Nothing.
Yeah, there's just...
It's hard to draw a line.
It's literally 85% you can't get a straight line to COVID, which is like, I don't think most people are fucking down with that. But and the Republicans that were having a problem with it were having a problem with this part of it, not the part where they didn't want COVID, but COVID relief. But it was sort of couched as COVID relief. But there's so much weird pork in there. I would love if somebody just said, whatever the bill is, it's got you. You got to. You can be a brother or a cousin of the bill, meaning you could say, well, what about money for this? And as long as you could kind of connect it to COVID, that'd be fine. But if you're sending money to Afghanistan for them to study
gender problems,
that's going to be a tough line. Can you find that one, Max Zapater? I've heard that one.
Yeah, I heard that one too. They announced that one like in December, and it's actually not Afghanistan. I think it's Pakistan.
Oh, Pakistan. Sorry.
Well, but to that same point, if it's to protect women in a country that doesn't protect women, that's fantastic. But how do we link this to COVID?
I don't know. It's a tough putt, as the great Jack Silver would say. All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news. Gina
Grad. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Well, Reno, Virginia Street Brewhouse, we've added a second show, I think on Saturday night. Anyway, March 19th and 20th, and the Jam in the Van Speakeasy, March 25th. Two shows. Dawson's doing stand-up. We got Loxie performing. Adam Ray's going to be out there opening and pulling balls in Waukegan Theater, May 6th. You guys can go out to as well. So just go to amcarolla.com for all the live shows. I want to thank Vinny Tortorich for coming in. Fat, a documentary too. Jane Kaczmarek and her genius boy toy. Another day's begun exploring our town. You can check out playhouselive.org. And until next time, this is Adam for Gina and Bald and Jane and Vinny saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and pick up any or all of Adam Carolla's books. The latest is called I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. They're all up at the website, adamcarolla.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.